Two nights ago, Yeshiva hosted Yossi Landau, who is the head of South Command of Zaka, and sitting together with my in-laws and with several other rebbeim and with around 100 talmidim of YU and MTA, a chance to listen to Yossi talk about the unspeakable experiences that he's had over the last 6-7 weeks. The event was organized as a conversation between Yossi, the head of the South Command of Zaka, and Dr. Yedidia Levy, who heads up the counseling center at YU. And Dr. Levy was moderating it. Dr. Levy asked him questions. It was an extraordinary evening. Reminded us of how the last couple of weeks fit into the greater perspective of thousands of years of Jewish history, as Rav was speaking about earlier, halacha hi biyadua. One of the questions that Dr. Levy asked him was, where did you, when he was describing the sort of work that he and his team were doing in Rachman Litzlan, identifying and finding, gathering all the parts of the Kedoshim, who lost their lives on Simchas Torah. See, he asked him, where do you draw the strength? Where do you draw the strength? And he had described previously sort of the work they've done the last couple of decades, that Zaka has existed, and sometimes under very, very trying circumstances, but this was a whole other level. And Dr. Levy said at one point, anyone who wants to leave can leave. Obviously, this is going to be an intense conversation. And he asked him, where do you draw the strength to do this work? And they're far from done. And he spoke about one home that they walked into, I believe it was in Be'eri, that was particularly, I'll leave out some of the details, but it was a particularly painful place to walk into, even by the standards of what was going on in Be'eri. And he said he gathered his team, he said this house is going to need 12 people, not enough to have 6. And he said he gathered his team in the middle of everything that was going on with the town, that house. So we're going to sit down in the middle, and we're going to sing Nigunim of Amunah. And then we're going to get to work. And I was struck by the fact that that reaches back very, very far. I think Shabbos Bereishis, the first Shabbos when we were beginning to process what, we were beginning to understand a little bit, what had gone on, beginning to process together in Shul, we spoke about the fact that when you look at Gedolei Yisrael over the generations and how they responded to massacres and how they responded to pogroms and how they responded to particularly violent expressions of anti-Semitism, there are always many parts to the response. And one of the pieces is to turn inward and be mechazek emunah. You see that particularly in the writings of the Rambam. And I came across this week, the last couple of days, actually the morning after the event with Zaka, I came across a sefer that sparked for me another layer of appreciating that, another layer of thinking about responding to tzara, to anti-Semitic tzara, in part with turning to our emuna. And it was sparked by the sefer I came across, penned by a well-known Rishon, but it's a little-known sefer, the Mamar al Yishmael, by the Rashba, who lived 700 years ago or so. And it's an ancient discussion about emuna. The Mamar al Yishmael is the Rashba's response to Muslims who had attacked the Jewish religion and had a whole host of questions in the Jewish religion. Historians discuss who exactly the anonymous Yishmael is that he's describing, whether it was Ibn Khazan, who was a Muslim who lived a couple centuries beforehand, or whether it was maybe more recent books at the time of the Rashba that were quoted Ibn Khazan, or whatever it is, he's responding to Muslims who were attacking the Jewish religion, asking a variety of theological questions. Over the course of this beautiful Mamar al Yishmael, the Rashba calmly responds. He said, you said this, here's why you're wrong. You said this, here's how we look at it, step by step, point by point. And it struck me that looking back to ancient discussions about Amunah, and looking back to discussions by Gedol Yisrael, by Gedol HaMasorah, and how they discussed our religion vis-a-vis other religions, ancient discussions of Amunah can also, they're important in their own right, they're an important part of Yom HaChazak, our own Amunah, and I think sometimes they also shed light, seeing the conversations of centuries ago, about theology, about Yadus versus Lahavdil, other religions, can often also shed light on certain aspects of the current conversations that are going on in the public square. I was talking this week with a relative who is stationed right now near the Gaza border. A nephew who's stationed right now near the Gaza border. And his role in the military is a religious one. It's part of the overall clergy staff. He's a rakaz mor. He's a rakaz for both for Masorah and for Ruach, both for strengthening Yadus and for dealing with counseling and mental health. And he was talking about how there's such an incredible explosion, positive explosion of interest, genuine interest in Yadus, and genuine openness in Yadus across Tzahal in really, really remarkable ways. And we were talking a little bit about what's going on here, and talked about the rally. I said, we're trying to do what little we can from a distance. And his response was, Bekiruv Levavot. What you're doing from a distance, geographically very far, but our hearts are very close. And that's the first thing that struck me about this Mamar al Yishmael. We'll in a moment turn our attention to the substance of some of the questions that the Muslims had asked and some of the substance of how the Rashba responded, and then we'll take a look at maybe some larger ideas that flow from that. But the first thing I was struck by when the historians discuss this work, so one of the things they grapple with is who is indeed the author of this? Is it the Rashba? Is it not the Rashba? Maybe it's one of the Rashba's contemporaries, Rabbeinu David. If you learn Psachim, we learn Sanhedrin. Come across a lot of Rabbeinu David. He was, like the Rashba, a student of the Ramban. One of the issues is the Ramban, their Rebbe, and Rabbeinu David perhaps as well, lived in the south of France, or at least was born in the south of France, in Girona. Whereas the Rashba lived his life where the Ramban had lived his adult life, in Barcelona, in the north of Spain, Girona in the south of Spain, and Barcelona in the north of Spain. And the historians wonder because they lived after the Reconquista, after the Catholics, the Christians, had taken back control from the Muslims of the north of Spain. So they try to figure out, if this is the Rashba, who is he talking to? The Rashba lived in northern Spain. The Rashba lived under the Catholics. You may remember the Rashba's Rebbe, when he was Rav of Barcelona, had to debate a Jew who had turned apostate, had turned Christian, Pablo Cristiani. That's who they were dealing with. Why is the Rashba writing about Islam? That was southern Spain. That was northern Africa. That was Arabia. Why is the Rashba dealing with this? So historians go back and forth. On the other hand, there are indications that this is written by the Rashba. The style is very much like the Rashba. Some of the Shitos line up with things the Rashba writes elsewhere in the Chidushim and in the Sefer Halacha and the Tshuvas. And it struck me, but that's us. Because one of the comments some of the historians make is that Gedol Yisrael weren't just concerned with what was happening in their backyard. It's true. The Jews in Barcelona, they were grappling with Christianity. But the Rashba was looking beyond. Rashba cared deeply about what was local, and the Rashba cared deeply about Jews across the world. And the Rashba cared deeply about the Jews who were grappling with Christianity, and the Rashba cared deeply with the Jews who were grappling with Islam. And it struck me that we ourselves are seeking to tap into that aspect of the Rashba, to care beyond our borders, and to care deeply, to be nosei ba'ol, with Jews in Eretz Israel. And in thinking about that, I'll share with you one other point. I apologize, the handouts are in two pieces. So there's a stapled packet of a few pages of the Rashba's Kuntres, and then there's one separate page entitled Dr. Bar Yefes. Dr. Bar Yefes is a Talmud Chacham from the days of the Rishonim. As you see, page 41, quoted by Batzal Naor in his introduction to the Sefer. So striking. It's a comment, again, by a Rishonim, the Rav Sheis Harofe Bar Yefes, Rabbi Dr. Sheis, the son of Yefes, who looked at a pasuk in Chumash and captured our response to two religions. For those who are learning with me Tuesday nights, this happens in Hilchas Yichud. This happens to be the pasuk that the Gemara roots all of Hilchas Yichud in this pasuk. It's a pasuk that has many layers. Here's a different layer. Ki yisischa achicha ben imecha. The Torah talks in Parshas Re'eh in the 13th parak of Dvarim about a terrible scenario when a Jew approaches another Jew as a missionary for Avodah Zarah, a mesis, and how the halacha has very specific guidelines for how we respond to a concern of a mesis. And the Torah describes that it might be someone who's close to you. You need to respond properly, even if it's a brother, achicha ben imecha, even if it's your brother, your mother's son, even if it's a child, even if it's Reicha Kesher Sher Kenafshecha, even if it's your friend, bosom buddy, soulmate, Baseisri comes into you secretly, there's no one else involved in this conversation, still one needs to respond with the halachic guidelines to this terrible event of a mesis. So this Rabbi Dr. Sheis by Yefes, so I see he gladdens the heart of all the doctors in the audience, the long the tradition of this. Of Rabbi Dr. Talmid Chachamim. So you take a look at what he says. He says, an additional layer of this, in addition, al pipshuto, the Torah is speaking to an individual event happening between two individual Jews. Chaim comes over to Beryl and the conversation unfolds. But this Rav Sheis Harofe, he says, there's another layer as well. Ki yisischa achicha ben imecha, in page 41. Ze Yeshua HaNotzri. It's a reference to Jesus. It's a reference to Christianity. Shuhu mar'eh atzmo, your brother, the son of your mother. Mar'eh atzmo shemashlim ha-Torah. Uma ames devareh mitzvaseh. Makes it seem like, religiously like a brother. He's accepting the Torah and also being mashlim, sort of filling it out and supplementing it. Hu v'chaveh rechokim enu ki rechok mizrachim arv. It may make it seem as though they're religiously more or less on the same page. No, there's plenty of daylight in between. We accept monotheism, and they don't accept monotheism. One, but also three. Beni Mecha, and it says that line, the Gemara grapples on a different layer. What, if you said a brother, why do you have to specify what type of brother? A brother who shares a mother. Beni Mecha, he says that's specifically a poke from the Ribbono Shalom at Yeshua HaNotzri, who will arise a millennium and a half after Nisina Satorah, ki hu no da b'imo v'lo b'aviv. Because he's referred to specifically as, we know who his mother was, it's not clear who his father was. So that's achicha, they make it seem like they're your brother, even though religiously, theologically, very, very far apart. And ben imecha. And then the last of the characters mentioned in that pasuk, re'echa shekinafshecha baseser limon. Your friend who's like yourself, kenafshecha, coming to you in secret to have this illegitimate conversation. Nirim ha-dvarim al yishma'ilim. Umalkam. He says these things, it's a reference to the Muslims. Shenirim shehem reyim lanu b'yichud Hashem. They do seem to be reyim. We do seem to reyacha, achicha, our terms over the course of Chumash, even halachic, often refer to people who share our values and share our beliefs. And the Muslims do share more belief with us than the Christians do. They agree with us to us on the concept of Hashem Echad. They strictly believe in monotheism. They don't believe in multiple gods. They don't believe in a physical god. V'cheinu, that is true. Aval, so srim binyan Torah seinu. But they thoroughly disagree with us on the edifice of Torah. Muslims agree that they pray to the same God that we do. They pray to Hashem Echad. but they have a distorted version of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said and did. We thoroughly reject their belief that although HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah through Moshe Rabbeinu, but subsequently decided to abrogate it, and it was superseded by the Nevuah of their prophet, Muhammad. Amar Lacha, so this Rabbi Dr. Shea says, the Torah is telling you, Afa Pishem Yachadim Kamocha. Don't be swayed by Achicha Daninecha, by the Christian presentation, and don't be swayed here by the Muslim presentation. Afa Pishem Yachadim Kamocha. The Muslims agree to us on Yichud Hashem. They accept Hashem Elokim Hashem Echad. Al Tusas Behav Lehem. But don't be drawn in by their Narishkeit. Al Yala Al Daitcha Shetibatel Afilu Mitzvah Kal Shabbat Torah. And don't be drawn in by their Narishkeit that even a single mitzvah could have been changed. It's a fascinating perspective. And it also reminds us that socially, culturally, over the centuries, we've had different relationships with not only with the religions, but with the people. And there was a time for many centuries when Jews felt socially, security-wise, more comfortable among the Muslims than among Christians. For a good part of the Middle Ages, that's the way it was. The Golden Age of Spain, we felt comfortable and safe among the Muslims. We did not feel comfortable and safe among the Crusaders and other Christians of Germany and France and so forth. And at this point, we look around and we feel differently. At this point, we look around and we feel that the non-Jews, non-Jewish cousins who have our back are no longer the Muslims, even from a safety perspective. So with this sort of historical perspective, let's look back and let's do a little bit, a touch. This is a big sefer. We could spend weeks, months learning the Rashba's Ma'amar Yishmael. But in the next couple minutes, I want to take a look, a little bit, a sampling of some of what the Rashba raises. Again, some of the questions that the Muslims raise, and a little bit of how the Rashba responds, both to think about our emunah per se, and also maybe to draw from it before we close some larger themes that are a part of the current political and security, military, social conversation as well. Now as Rav Sheis HaRofei mentions, the Muslims have no truck with us in terms of belief in a Borei Olam or belief in a single and singular Hashem Echad with no guf. That they don't disagree. That much of Yadus they accept. They deny the eternal validity of Torah. That's where we part ways theologically with the Muslims. And so the questions that they have are of two types. The questions that they have, the theological attacks are of two types. Number one, they try to show it must be that the Chumash that you Jews have isn't the accurate original Chumash. People must have added things. And that has been an ongoing kfira from the days of the Muslims to university academies of today. Spinoza, Wellhausen, Ariyom Hazeh. That was one major attack. Things must have changed in your Chumash. And the other major attack is, don't you see that you no longer keep halacha the way you used to? And that lends credence to our approach and halacha changes. And that lends credence to our Epicurusish approach that a couple of centuries ago, God came to Muhammad and said, we're changing halacha again. Because you see, halacha always changes. Those are the two major attacks. Are the text of Chumash, people have been editing the text of Chumash, and halachic practice, even you Jews have to admit that it changes. So let's take a look at a little bit of each of those questions, and a bit of how the Rashba responds. Here you see the opening page, page 59, there's that much introduction. Page 59 is where you actually begin to have the Rashba himself. Ma'amar al-Yishmael, as you see, Shechiber al-Hadassos, Vahuk Seal, it's a response to a Muslim who foolishly attacked other religions. He attacked Christianity. V'diber af al-Daseinu Hashlem, he even spoke against our whole and healthy and well-rooted religion. And this is the Rashba's response. So the first, within that first sort of category of, don't you see that someone must have changed things in your Chumash? So the first attack that the Rashba mentions and responds to In the opening paragraph, Re'isi Avil, there's a lot of poetry here. It says, I see someone who's wrong-headed, who's misguided, who's a fool, Kasil Echad, he dares to Ledaber Sefrein HaMekudash, he dares to speak against the Tanakh, and specifically the Chumash, Sefer Torah Moshe Rabbeinu. And what does he say? He's trying to pull together some straws. Yigabev Gevavim. L'hashiv Dvarav Shelo Hevin. He's responding to things that he didn't fully understand. He didn't understand it, and he's superficial, and that's why he's asking all these questions. Tchilas Sechlusav. And the opening of his folly, Ki Amar Ki Motzav Ben Apchisos Mashiiches HaSefer El Yehuda Ben Aznusim Kalasav. He says, you open the Chumash, and you have all these embarrassing stories. Yehuda's in an embarrassing situation with his daughter-in-law. And how about Reuven? He goes on to talk about Lot. He says, Chumash Bereishis in particular is full of all these awkward stories, embarrassing stories. He goes on to talk about David and Bathsheba as well. So he says, obviously this must have been added by some later editor must have put in, how can you, if you believe that these people are the Avos HaUma, these are the founding fathers of the Jewish religion, and they did such embarrassing things, how are you talking, obviously things were thrown in. Obviously things were thrown in. And the Rashba's response is in two parts. He goes on later to address some of the specifics of some of these stories. I don't want to get into it. Later on, he goes on to give essentially his Rebbe, the Ramban's approach to the story of Yehuda and Tamar. There was something embarrassing about it, but at the same time, there's also an element of a type of a Yibum that you find in Rus as well, an expanded idea of Geula. There was spiritual value, Kabbalistic value, in having a relative of the Nifter marry the widow, if not the brother, then some other relative. So he addresses the specifics of some of the stories. But Hanogei L'Inyanenu right now is what's most striking is the way he addresses this whole class of questions. He says, maybe I shouldn't even respond. Maybe I shouldn't even respond. It's so foolish. He says, but on the other hand, ani meshiv alav, I will respond. Man lo yiyeh chacham be'enav kol zoneh acharav. I'm not sure if I need to take Ibn Hazam seriously, but I need to care for anyone else who might be taken in. So he says it's exactly the opposite. Ha'emes yored darko. Dvarim elu kishar kol advarim sheyiru be'enai kol cholek b'sarosein shem hefach hanos. Anytime you see something in the Chumash which seems awkward, that's not comfortable. Why would that be in the Chumash? It's a good question to figure out why it's in the Chumash. He says, but people don't, if you're making up your own stories, you don't include those. Look at the annals of other nations. It's all pomp and circumstance. It's all glorious. Look at any other ancient annal of Sancheirev, of the pharaohs. What's it full of? Pure gaiva. Everything is perfect, life is perfect. And by the way, it's not just the annals of Sancheirev and of the pharaohs, it's also contemporary annals on Instagram. What do people post usually? You're posting about your vacation. It's all perfect, right? It's curated photos. It's curated photos, right? You see the whole crew on top of the mountain taking the sunset, which is beautiful, and maybe true, even if that picture wasn't modified. But you don't see the kid throwing up on the way up the mountain. You don't see the 3 hours of traffic trying to get back to the hotel. You see the curated pictures. That's human nature. And it's understandable human nature. And he says, when you look at Chumash, you realize you're not looking at a human work. We're so honest. We're willing to tell you that David had painful events, embarrassing events in his life. We're willing to tell you that even if I can understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Yehuda and Tamar to end up together, and it was this type of Yibum and Geula led to Mashiach, but it's an embarrassing event. If human writers were just trying to produce Jewish PR, this would never have made it in. Which nation chooses to mention all their faults? Only the Jewish people. Because this is Torah Hashem. Because this is Emes. And it's going to have warts and all. We'll have our glorious moments, and we'll have our failures, and there's what to learn from them. It says, what you see as the bugs, those are the features. And that's proof, if anything, he says to Ibn Khazam. That's how I know that this is on. This is Yad Hashem. This is a divine work. It's a divine work of Emes. And that's why you find all of these events that a human editor who's just trying to produce something glossy and slick would never have stuck this in. And then, I'm sorry, we're going to skip from page 59 to page 78. As I said, we could maybe some other time. It's safer to learn within, but for now we'll just sample. He goes on to talk about Ibn Hazam, or whoever it is, the Ishmael, the anonymous Ishmael to whom the Rajba is responding, said, I'm not going to believe your Torah. Your Torah is all Eid Echad. It's all just one person. Moshe Rabbeinu writes a Chumash, and he gives it to the Jewish people. He said, look at that bottleneck. You believe in him. And then he says Moshe Rabbeinu only gives it Shevet Levi. So they're controlling the Chumash, and no one else has any access to the information. And who knows what they did with it? Once again, coming back, they're saying there must have been people who were modifying and editing. And why should I believe what you write? And to which the Rajba responds, if you actually opened your eyes and looked at the evidence, you would know that you're not accurate. If you actually opened your eyes and looked at all the facts. Yes, it's true, he says. And page 78. This Yishmael, what a fool. Kita, his mistake was, Mashara Batori, he sees a pasuk. This pasuk does appear in the Chumash. He is correct. This is at the very end of Chumash. Moshe writes the whole Sefer Torah. This is at the very end when HaKadosh Baruch Hu conveyed to him the entirety of the Chumash. He puts it down, creates the Sefer Torah. Moshe says to the Levim, take the Sefer Torah, put it beside Ha'aron. So Ibn Khazam said, oh, look, you see, there's one copy of the Sefer Torah. They're hiding it inside the shrine. Who knows what they're doing to it? The Choshav, on page 79, he thinks the Levim had it on their own and they were doing their thing. He says, maybe you should read a couple. Instead of cherry picking, why don't you read some more Chumash? Shibush Rav, HaTorah Nisuna Yisei Tzal Kulam. Moshe Rabbeinu gives the first copy of the Sefer Torah to the Levim. That was meant to be in the halachic museum, so to speak, in the holiest sense. There are a whole series of items that were meant to be right next to the Aron. The Mon and the Mata Aron and the Sefer Torah, yes, together with the Luchas. That was, in a certain sense, the sacred museum of the Jewish people. But that wasn't the only Sefer Torah. And if you, not only do Chazal point out there Moshe Rabbeinu wrote one for each Shevet, says if you look at the Psukim and Chumash, even if you, Ibn Khazam, don't have Masoras Chazal, look at the Psukim and Chumash. It says he gives it to the Kohanim Bnei Levi and El Zikinei Yisrael and to the Zakenim as well, who were the teachers of Torah to the Jewish people. And he goes on to write that the same Chumash also tells us that every Jew is supposed to make a copy of the Sefer Torah for himself. And the king is meant to have a copy of the Sefer Torah that he carries around, which means, yes, there was one original Sefer Torah, and everyone was coming to make copies from it. And copies and copies and copies and copies. And the Chumash is clear that learning Torah, this is one of the hallmarks of the Jewish people, is meant to be something that we all share. Vishinantam levanacha v'dibartabam isn't just the elites, the intellectual elites, isn't just the priests who studied Torah. If you actually looked at the evidence, the Chumash is actually saying the exact opposite of what you allege. There were copies of Sifrei Torah. Klal Yisrael were flooded with copies of Sifrei Torah soon after Moshe Rabbeinu had written the first one. And we continue to have copies of Sifrei Torah all over the world. Another issue that he raises is, as I said before, one major thrust of the Muslims is your Chumash must have been edited by later people. And we saw some of the specific questions that they raise and some of the specific responses that the Rashba has. The other major issue is, don't you see that the halacha changes? You Jews yourself, you change halacha all the time. And the Rashba responds that you're missing the point. You're missing the point. He'll often point that it wasn't a change. The Torah remains the same. Facts on the ground change. Situations change. And different principles of the Torah are relevant in different situations. One of the examples that he gives is, I'm sorry, this did not make it into the copies, into the packet. One of the examples that he gives is Mila. He says, Ibn Hazam says, look at Chumash and look at Sefer Yehoshua. Don't you see the Jews weren't practicing Mila in the Midbar? You see that you guys play fast and loose with halacha, so we could do that too. And he says, Mila hadn't changed. And the Psukim reinforce that. What had changed were the facts. He says, we believe in the sanctity of human life. And over the course of the years in the Midbar, there was a severe concern of Sakana. That's why they held back from doing Brisson in the Midbar, most Jews. And that's why as soon as they were able to settle in Eretz Yisrael, in a more stable, sturdy place, or no longer camping in the wilderness, so right away, one of the first things they do is say, like, that's exact. The same thing you notice, look at it with better perspective. One of the first things that happens after the Jewish people enter Eretz Yisrael is a mass milah, which if you think about it, didn't make a lot of strategic sense. Like, you had all these years in the Midbar to do your thing, and now you're finally in conquest mode. You're entering Eretz Yisrael, and you're surrounded by marauding enemies. One of the first things you do is a national milah. That doesn't make a lot of military sense. LMI. But this is a mitzvah that we had been yearning to keep. It was just an abeyance. The mitzvah didn't stop, but it was dangerous. The moment we had the access to a safe place to do bris milah, one of the first things Klal Yisrael did was bris milah. And he goes on to talk about this. You do have in the packet in front of you. Yeah, it's interesting. Who's entitled to Eretz Yisrael? Yeah. So it's interesting that was not an issue. We'll get back to some of the things he does raise. But one of the things that, as far as I saw, I can't say that. To say that I'm not a bucky in the safer would be an understatement. But I'm not aware that, I haven't yet seen that he discusses the question of Eretz Yisrael. That's a modern question. I don't think traditionally Muslims felt that they were entitled to Eretz Yisrael. I mean, they were trying generally to conquer the world and spread Islam everywhere. And they had an enormous empire. The Ottoman Empire lasted for centuries and centuries and centuries until World War I. So they conquered Eretz Yisrael together with many other countries. It doesn't seem like traditionally they felt that they had necessarily unique connection to Eretz Yisrael, nor at that point, Jews were beginning to move back to Eretz Yisrael. The Rajba's Rebbe, the Ramban, famously succeeded in making Aliyah. He was one of the first Sfarim to make Aliyah. When he came, there were a group of Bali Atosos, Ashkenazim, who had arrived not long before. We have the famous Drashas Rosh Hashanah, where the Ramban gave in Akko his first Rosh Hashanah in Eretz Yisrael. And if you go to the Old Sea Yerushalayim, you'll find the Beis HaKnesses HaRamban, which is connected back to the Beis HaKnesses, which is believed the Ramban himself davened. So there were Jews beginning to come back to Eretz Yisrael at that point, but I don't think it was a flashpoint. I think that's, again, there's a whole separate ball of wax, but that's really the claim that we stole Eretz Yisrael, I think, is something that only began with the Mufti in the 20s and 30s, the 1920s and 30s. Right. The Crusades were a war between the Christians and the Muslims who would control Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbi Neuberger has pointed out, and I think about this not infrequently, it's hard, and once you see this, once Rabbi Neuberger points out, it's hard to unsee it. The first Rashi in Chumash, how did anyone understand it before a century ago? To us, it's effortless to understand. Rashi says that one of the purposes of Chumash Breishis is so that we can, when someone says to the Jewish people, you stole, you're a thief, you stole Eretz Yisrael, we can respond, no, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the universe, and he decided who has it. And Eric saw is ours because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said so in the Chumash. So Nuber has pointed out a number of times. Nowadays, anyone understands what the Rashi means. But until 100 years ago, for centuries, how did anyone understand what that Rashi meant? Who? Since the days of Sefer Shoftim, until around a century ago, when were Jews ever accused of stealing Eretz Yisrael from anyone else? It's a chidas tuma. But now we understand it. But yeah, that piece is a more modern issue. The Jews were moving, but they weren't moving in militarily. And I don't think the Muslims necessarily felt that same central connection that they argue, some of them argue nowadays, that they feel. Another, coming back again, we had said the two major sets of questions. One set of questions that the Muslims are asking is about the text of the Chumash. The other one is about the sturdiness of halachic practice, the permanence of halachic practice. So another question in that second category that they ask, this you do have in front of you, is he says, what do you mean? I'll show you, on page 90-91, Ibn Hazm says, I'll show you that halacha has changed. You believe that halacha has changed. You've changed systems from one system to another system. Because he says, Bnei Noach, you yourself say that there used to be Shevmas Bnei Noach, and then God changed everything and switched over to Tarag Mitzvahs. So you see, you believe that halacha goes through changes and stages. So we say it evolved some more, and now we landed with Islam. And the Rashba responds, you missed the point. You missed the point. He says, number one, mitzvahs Bnei Noach haven't ended. You, the Rashba says, are still bound by Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. Whether you keep them or not is a different question. But Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach didn't end. It's not that God switched. He started with Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach and then switched from Torah's Noach to Torah's Moshe. He says, no. He says, you're bound by Shevitz Benoach Arayam Azeh. That didn't end. That Kadosh Baruch Hu came to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, now I'm giving you Taryag Mitzvahs for the Jewish people. Moreover, the Rashba says, he says, you're also bound by Torah's Moshe in the sense that he says, from the time of Matan Torah and on, HaKadosh Baruch Hu refreshed and reviewed and reinforced Matan Torah Har Sinai included the Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach for all of humanity. The Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach are built into the Chumash. The Chumash that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai and over the course of the 40 years in the desert. It's all part of the Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Moshe. And as he goes on to say, the question you were asking me before is actually your problem, not mine. The question you're asking me before, that, oh, your Torah is based on an Echad, that Moshe Rabbeinu had his own Torah, that Bnei Levi have it, and, you know, it wasn't in the public domain. He says, not only do I respond, explain to you why, if you read Chumash, you'll see that's not the case. He says, that's actually why mitzvahs Bnei Noach were included as mitzvahs for all of humanity within the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu gave, because he makes a point that the Rashbi here makes a point that the Rambam made, and that the Kuzri made, and Ibn Ezra, and many, many, many in the generations that preceded him point that, and they point that it's a pasuk in Chumash, God made it this point in the Chumash, that we ultimately believe any Navi only because of Torah's Moshe. So the fact that a single person comes and says things that are very compelling, he does nisim that are astounding, okay. If you remember your Kanaki Yank in King Arthur's court, people can often, you can do very impressive tricks that will fool many people. That's not proof positive. That's not proof positive. It says, one person says that he's a Navi, even if we were convinced he's a Navi. He has Bechira Chavshas. Maybe he turns sour later on. Ultimately, our Amuna in all Nevi'im, we listen to Nevi'im because the Chumash says so. Any Navi, before or since, we believe because one of the Tariq Mitzvahs HaTorah, Nevi'im aren't sort of outside of the system, they do their own thing. All honest Nevi'im are part of the system of Halacha. I'm bound to any Navi because one of the 613 Mitzvahs is a love tishma'un. It's to listen to the Navi. And I'm bound by the Tariq Mitzvahs because Ma'amar HaSinai, because not only because of the Nisim of Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Makos and Kriyas Yamsuf, but Mamar Har Sinai was mass national nevuah. That's far beyond any other prophetic experience that's recorded or claimed to have happened. And he says the Chumash itself points this out here on page 91. Moshe Rabbeinu, Mazgiro, Santam, Moshe Rabbeinu keeps reminding the Jewish people of Chumash. Atar Eiz Hadad. You all saw this. Minashamay Mishmich has called Chaliyas Reka. You all heard. You all experienced Nevuah. Devar of Shamata. Mitoch Ha'esh. The experience, no other religion makes the claim, as the Chumash itself points out, have you ever come across another nation that claims to have had mass national nevuah? There are one or two Eastern religions that claim there was mass nevuah, and then everyone who was there died but one. So that's not really very significant. Every other religion claims to have begun with revelation by a single person, by Muhammad, by Jesus, by a couple of people who witnessed an event. Vezehu. He says, our emuna is built on a unique, never replicated, never duplicated, I should say, event of mass national nevuah that then got passed on. And there's incredible stress in the Chumash of continuing to pass on as a nation what we saw and what we experienced. That's unique in the history of religions. And the fact that we accept any other individual Navi is because that Chumash tells us Elav Tishmon. The fact that, so number one, it's absurd for an individual Navi to come and say, God told me privately that he's changing the whole Torah, when he said in that Torah that he doesn't plan to do that, and we only ultimately going to believe you because of that Torah, so you're carrying out your whole foundation. Moreover, mitzvahs b'nei Noach ultimately are more firmly rooted. Yes, Hashem originally gave 6 mitzvahs to Adam and a 7th to Noach, and then he gave Mila to Avram, and so on and so forth, and Gid Anashe perhaps to the b'nei Yaakov. But ultimately, all of those are included in Torah's Moshe. And they're on firmer footing, li'olam vod, not only the Tariq mitzvahs that Jews keep, the Shev mitzvah Noach that every human is meant to keep. You, the Rashba says to Ibn Chazam, you keep Shev mitzvah Noach, not only because Hashem told it to Adam and to Noach, but because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told it to the Jewish people at Har Sinai through Moshe Rabbeinu. It's all rooted. So that's not an example. You're getting it totally backwards if you think that there was an evolution from Torah's Noach to Torah's Moshe, and so there can be another evolution, Mahavdil, Khalila to Torah's Muhammad. So this is a little bit of a sampling. Again, there are tens of pages. A little bit of a sampling, again, some of the questions that the Muslims raised on both sides, questioning the validity of the text of the Chumash, and questioning the permanence, the sturdiness of halachic practice, and a little bit of a taste of the Rashba's calm and reasoned responses. What I want to do now is just spend a couple of moments before we close. Spend a couple of closes with a beautiful Gemara in Chagiga. I think speaks to the moment. But before we head there, let's just review from a different angle. Okay, let's just think through. We just got a front row seats, as it were, watching the Rashba respond to. This is an ancient conversation, a sefer that was written over 700 years ago, responding perhaps to Muslim questions from 1,000 years ago. But I said before, not only is there incredible value, one piece of our multi-dimensional response to tzara, to anti-Semitic tzara, is to mechazek our own emunah, but let's look at the conversation about emunah and find in it elements of the current conversation beyond theological between Jews in the world, between Jews and Muslims. What were some of the yesodos? What were some of the principles that emerged from the Rashba's responses to the Yishmael? So number one is that we, from the outset, from the very first point he made, you know, you look at the story of Yehuda and Tamar and David Bathsheba and you say, oh, this can't be true. No, we care about truth. He said, we're giving you the full picture. We've been trained by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to care about truth. Point number one. And that includes, point number two, honesty about our own flaws. Sometimes to a fault, Jews are remarkably honest about what we've done well and certainly about what we've done poorly. And he moves on to say that point number three is that the Rashba moves on to say that the Yesodos don't change, that we live by principles that are unchanging. We live by, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us principles, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us guidelines for life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a moral compass that does not change. Point number four, we recognize that different realities may call for different practical responses. The same principles may apply differently in different situations. And certainly, the way the Jewish people respond to anti-Semitism, when we have a state and an army, will practically look very different in many ways to the way Jewish people responded to anti-Semitism over the preceding 19 or so centuries when we had no sovereign state and no army. But that's a question of the same unchanging principles, the same sturdy moral compass playing itself out in different situations. Different situations, the same principles will apply differently. Point number five, Yesod number five, something that the Rashba was stressing from the very beginning, is that we believe that evidence matters. The Yishmael is just sort of saying, oh, look at Chumash, and you see, And the Rashba says, Rashba keeps saying to him, don't be a fool, actually read what it says. And don't just cherry pick one pasuk. Look at context. Look at the whole picture. Evidence matters. Truth matters. We have honesty about our own flaws. We care about evidence. The Yesodos don't change, although we have to figure out, sometimes in incredibly painful ways, how to apply our unchanging moral compass to new and painful situations. This is true then, this is true now, this is true theologically, and it's true practically and morally and socially and culturally. And three more points. Pikuach nefesh matters. That's what the Rashba responded to the Yishmael. You're wondering why we didn't practice Mila in the Midbar? You thought, oh, we must have changed our rules? No. Our rules didn't change, but we give supreme value to human life. Pikuach nefesh matters that much that Mila is gonna be in abeyance because of Pikuach nefesh. That doesn't mean that anything changed. It means that we have a clear set of values, and for us, Pikuach nefesh is one of our top values. And point number seven is that we believe that there's a moral code for all human beings, and it's part of our Torah. Bnei Noach, unlike what the Muslim thought, Mitzvah Bnei Noach, we don't think that Mitzvah Bnei Noach used to apply and stopped applying when the Jews came and superseded that. Adarabah, not only did it continue, but the concept and the details of Mitzvah Bnei Noach are a part of our Torah. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave a Torah at Har Sinai in a unique, unduplicated fashion, mass nevuah, which included unique mitzvahs to Jewish people, and a bedrock of mitzvahs and morality for all human beings. That's a part of what we believe, is that every human being has a moral code. And finally, point number eight, I neglected to mention before when we were looking at what the Rashba says, one additional attack that the Yishmael had, to which Rashba responds, is, what's with this Torah Shebaal Peh that you have? Even if I accept your Torah Shebaal Chazal, what is the Torah Shebaal Peh? Where is that fitting? The Rashba has a lot to say about that, and many Sfarim before and since have had plenty to say about that. But just to give you one thread of a larger conversation, one of the threads that he raises, the Rashba says, and you have this actually in front of you, the last page in the packet, 116, 117. One of the threads that he raises is, he says, even if it's a humanly authored work, any substantive, sophisticated book will have multiple layers of meaning. So if you have a shallow author, so you're going to have a shallow book. But if you have a profound, even a human profound author, it's going to be a profound book. Take a look on page 116, four lines into that paragraph. The Devar of Bezek Mishlo Lamat Sefer Me'olam. So this Muslim seems like he's never read a good book in his life. Lo mi sifrei hadas mi hadasas. No book of any religion. Lo mi sifrei mechaber b'shum chachma. Doesn't seem like he's read any good book in any discipline, any area, any field. If you have even a humanly authored work, if he's a wise, sophisticated, the nuanced person, yeah, say for who? Yosra book. The wiser, the deeper the author, the wiser, the deeper the book. The wiser he is. There'll be more ideas. We know from reading sophisticated works of human authors, fiction and non-fiction alike. There are layers. You may not appreciate reading Shakespeare. You may enjoy the language. You may feel like a waste of time. But if you read it, there's a lot going on. There are multiple layers in any sophisticated, humanly authored book. He says, why would you expect any less from a divinely authored book? If the author has infinite wisdom, we would expect infinite layers of meaning. And that perhaps is point number 8 in terms of the Yesodos, the larger Yesodos that speak to the current conversation, is that truth is always profound. Truth is always profound. If people are making shallow arguments, that's not where we're looking. If people don't care about truth, don't care about evidence, just cherry-picking one point that makes a point, if people don't value pikuach nefesh, people don't think that there's universal morality, there's certain moral universals that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of everyone, if people don't have honesty with their own flaws, that's not where we're looking for emes. We know what we stand for, and this has been a part of this. What the Rashba says about our emuna speaks to our emuna, and it's an emuna that has shaped the way the Jewish people live and think and feel and deal with everything over the course of the centuries. I'll close with this. Gemara Chagiga, very powerful, emotional Gemara Chagiga, because it actually talks about, to the extent that we can speak in these terms, about the emotions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, which itself is obviously a metaphor. Like everything we say about HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a metaphor. All of our experiences are human, so we the only way we can imperfectly describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in human terms. So that's in the Tanakh. With Saber Sa'ozen, Gemara Chagi, I think it's Dafei, Kamatz and Apasuk, B'mistarim Tivka Nafshi, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes himself to the Navi as crying in private. That even when in public everything seems happy and joyous, but in the back room, in private, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, private chambers, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was crying. What's he crying about throughout the years of Golos? And the Gemara talks about what are the tears that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cries. Two of the things that the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cries for, Gavasin Shal Yisrael and Gavasin Shal Malchus Shamayim. That throughout the years and centuries of Golos, Golos is a strike against the pride of the Jewish people, and it's a strike against the pride of the Jewish religion. The Jewish people are so downtrodden, that's difficult for our pride, and it looks as though HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Judaism isn't real. That was one of the major arguments that we did not see here, that the Christians and some Muslims made as well. Look, you see, obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave up on you guys. Look how downtrodden you've been for centuries. The Rav spoke very, very famously, called Odi Dofek. That was one of the great knocks. HaKadosh Baruch Hu came in 48, and even more in 67. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is reminding us that he's here, reminding us that we, the Jewish people, remain connected to him in miraculous and permanent ways. That's what, and the pairing of those, Jewish pride, and the pride of the Jewish nation, Gavasan Shal Yisrael, and Gavasan Shal Mavshayim, the pride of the Jewish religion. It's a pairing that the Rambam has as well. Weeks ago we spoke about, I think that Shabbos Bereishis was also, by the Rambam at the end of the, I believe it's the 7th parak of Hilchos Melachim, it says that every Jewish soldier who's fighting Melchemes Mitzvah is fighting not only for Jewish lives and Jewish blood, he's also fighting for Kiddush Hashem. That pairing of Gavasa Shal Yisrael and Gavasa Shal Malchus Shamayim. It's what we daven for every day in Avinu Malkeinu. We say, Harim Kerem Yisrael Amecha, and we say, Harim Kerem Mishichecha. That's the Kaddish Baruch Hu, to restore the Kerem, the pride of the Jewish people, restore the pride of the Jewish religion, through a hisgalus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the time of Bias HaMashiach. That's what we done for every Shabbat. Tizkadeh v'sizkadeh, we've been diving all the way through. Tizkadeh v'sizkadeh, shusaruk shalayim ircha. Ultimately, we hope and pray for Mashiach, not only because Mashiach will be a... Mashiach will mean that the tzaras will relent. Bias HaMashiach will mean that everything, people will be moral and everything will be clear. We'll no longer have to argue over MS. MS will be clear to everyone. and we'll be able to live in peace and safety. It's certainly that. And it's also that Mashiach will mean Gilui Kvod Shamayim. Mashiach will mean everyone will realize. Everyone will realize that Kadosh Baruch, the things that are that we uniquely realize will be universal. And those are our tefillos. We turn to Kadosh Baruch Hu. They should give us Yeshua, should give us Geula, that the Tzar should be rolled back. The Tzar should be rolled back vis-a-vis the Jewish people. The Tzar should be rolled back vis-a-vis the Jewish religion. And we should be Zocha very soon not only to Yeshua, but to Geula as well. Harim Karim Yisrael Amecha. Harim Karim Mashiach Echa. Yashikach.